Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hockey! Yeah.
My favorite.
It's Judd's Hockey Show.
And welcome into Judd's Hockey Show, Judd Declan, and we got a special guest.
Stella.
Look at who's here.
Stella
stayed up late watching the game last Bark. Night. She's got, Bark. You got takes, don't you? You got takes, and plus it's
Sells.
About 5. It's actually an hour till you're supposed to eat. This is what happens, Declan. Nutrisource, too spoiled. She thinks she should eat right now. No.
Oh,
you got to wait an hour.
Mwah. Can you play top line center? Can you play top line center? Please.
She's not happy about that. She's not happy. So the Wild, excuse me for a second here. I'll push you down. Ah, there we go. Wild scores 4 goals last night, 4-1 over a Ducks team. I'm not going to try and blow smoke here. The Ducks are terrible. They're the only team not to win a game in regulation. They have not held a lead this season going into the third period. Nonetheless, sometimes I think that you need a game like that. And I guess my first takeaway is exactly that. That was an opportunity, Dex, with the Kraken on board for Friday night to play a sort of get-well game, and it appeared that the Wild took advantage, at least in the second half of the game.
Yeah, good for them. And the Ducks, yes, are stinky. The fact that I texted you, midway through the second, and I said, this is a boring-ass game. You know, you wanted them to go out there and just throttle down on a poor team like that who is just offensively incredibly limited. And that's saying something when Trevor Zegras is so amazingly talented and basically should have scored the lacrosse goal. They challenged for offsides. Wild catch a break. Otherwise, that would have been, and I guess you can still play it on highlight reels because it was that incredible, but he did it again. He did the Michigan. He did that lacrosse goal. And also, just side note, I love the old school Mighty Ducks logo. Love the logo. Yep. Those Hunter Orange are just some of the worst in the NHL, man. Hard to watch.
The Giants and Orioles have worn those in baseball, right?
Yeah, and that's fine. It works for those franchises, in my opinion, though. It works for Baltimore. It works for San Francisco. Okay. I don't think blaze orange. When I think teal, I think black. I
thought
think
you
gold.
Weren't the Jersey Police. I thought you hated the Jersey
I'm
Police.
I'm not Jersey Police until it affects something that I notice, and then I will be the Jersey Police.
Okay, so you are down on the people that police the jerseys until you don't like the
that
jerseys.
That is correct.
At which point you come and take a...
It's very Larry David.
Yes, you take a view that you don't like. The jersey. I was about to say something else, but I'm not saying.
But back to the actual game. I thought it was awesome that Kirill Kaprizov basically took things over. Sometimes, and we've asked about this from superstar players in this town before, sometimes you just need your superstar to take things over. Couple power play goals for him, 9 shots on net. You can tell he came in maybe a little more pissed off because he got the match penalty and it got the maximum fine, too, by the way, from the NHL for this the dumb situation with Doughty. So maybe he came in with his hair on fire a little bit more than usual. And you need your superstar sometimes to take things over. Kirill did that. It opened then the floodgates basically in the third period. And the Wild were able to snap that goalless streak and hopefully maybe get back on track here after just a week of playing stale, pretty boring hockey.
And Matt Dumba scores a goal.
Yeah.
So here's the thing that I liked about the Dumba goal, and it wasn't just him. But with the fact that this team hadn't scored a goal since I think there was 3:08 left when Boldy scored into an empty net against Montreal 3 games ago, I like the fact that the Wild ordinarily activates its defensemen offensively, but I felt that they activated them even more against the Ducks. And Dumba was standing right in front there,
Dumba.
Which is sort of a sad commentary on the fact that he really that the shot is not back yet, and it might never be back. But I loved the fact that they were being aggressive. Now, against the Ducks, it works. Is that going to work against a good team or cost you? I have no clue. But it was good to see him score. You're right about Kaprizov, who looked absolutely fantastic. That tip-in goal from the high slot was a thing of beauty.
Yep.
I don't think we understand the scope of what he can do, because he makes it look simple, until you see other players try it, and it's like that puck goes wide, over the net, they miss it entirely. Kirill's ability to turn the puck is phenomenal. The one guy on the Ducks I felt bad for, though, poor John Gibson.
Yeah.
Poor the goaltender. He's good. He's good, and he played well, but he's got no chance. And it was good to see Dmitry Kulikov with the Wild last year play a major role, including, I believe, the high slot tip-in by Kaprizov go off his breezers. It was good to see Kulikov play a big-time supporting role in a win by his former team.
Yep, and the Ducks, I think, if they get their right draft picks here, they might be a little bit better. And like I said, Zegras is so much fun to watch that if you're a fan of that franchise, you get to build around that dude who should be an absolute stud for them. But for the Wild, I thought it was great. Yeah, the depth guys kind of showed up. I thought Kalen Addison had a very noticeable, productive game. I mean, that guy, we talk about activating defenders, and we've seen that from Wild defenders for basically the last 10 to 12 years. And man, that guy is activated all over the place. I mean, he's up the ice. He's carrying the puck in from the neutral zone. He's leading odd man rushes. He's not afraid to get down low towards the goal line, which can sometimes be dangerous from a defenseman's point of view. I kind of told you, I believe, what was that, maybe two weeks ago when we were through game 6 or 7, that I thought he was the third most positive, impactful player, if for my word vomit there, outside of Kirill and Matt Boldy. Not just because he's racked up some power play points, but when you watch him, you can see the difference that he makes when he's on the ice. And I saw it again against a bad Ducks team, but still, you see that guy on the ice when he's playing very well.
And I felt as well on the blue line, Spurgeon played great. Spurgeon made about 3 or 4 just nice plays, nice small plays. They weren't sexy plays, but they were nice. Brodin at one point was on the ice with Dumba and covered for him and actually came over and played his side. So yeah, it was definitely a game in which I felt that the engagement of aggressiveness was up, which was also seen through the amount of your favorite term, PIMS, that were handed out in this game, because there were several dust-ups. One thing I loved, and it was brought to attention on the TNT telecast, I love the fact that when Kaprizov got into it with a Ducks player, I think it was Jones, when Kaprizov got into it with Jones and sort of cross-checked him and then turned and was skating towards the blue line and Jones was about to cross-check Kaprizov from behind, Boldy saw it and was keeping an eye on Jones and jumped him. Now, we can debate fighting and we can debate like enforcers. And I get that has changed completely. But I do think that when you're talking about Kaprizov and a guy like that, as good as Boldy is, I want somebody defending Kirill. Like, the whole Doughty thing frustrates me a little bit. And Dex, we're going down this path, I think in a game against Philadelphia last week, Austin Matthews of the Maple Leafs cheap-shotted a guy. And then there was a big thing about, should he have fought his own fight there? Okay, I'm not advocating cheap-shotting players, but if you go back to my day, and I mean, I think that this is still true. I don't want my stars fighting.
Right.
And yep. I don't want Kirill, like, Kirill's strong as an ox, so I'm not saying he can. But do I want Kirill fighting? No. Do I want him possibly being hurt? Absolutely not. And so the fact that Boldy jumped the Ducks player, I absolutely loved, because I think that Kirill is the one guy on this team that I want defended at almost all costs.
And TNT had a great little breakdown of that between their intermissions too, which was great too. It was kind of refreshing, in my opinion, to hear some, again, different broadcasting point of views and whatnot. And they were discussing that in detail as well. And yeah, like, I like that Kirill is built and like an ox, basically. He's not just a pushover. With all due respect to the great Sidney Crosby, who was apparently on the Mount Rushmore of them for hockey when they were discussing that in the pregame yesterday. And obviously Steven Stamkos is a phenomenal player who's a first ballot Hall of Famer as well. Those guys get hurt. Those guys get banged up. Kirill is not afraid, number one, to push his weight a little around, but he's not a pushover. You're not going to hurt that guy unless you maliciously go after him or there's some type of fluke situation, right? Like, he's not made of glass. He takes an incredible amount of care of in himself. And he's built so strongly that you can't just push him around. You know, Gabrick might even be the better poster boy for this, right? When he was here with Minnesota, that a guy who was so extremely giftedly talented and so quick and so fun to watch, but that groin got pulled every other month, it seemed, for God's sake. So it's cool to see that Kirill can stick up for himself and he's not afraid to throw his weight around. But at the same time, he does have to be smart, right? Like he can't be getting in situations where
his teammates have to help him out.
Yeah.
Like the Doughty thing, I guarantee you that somebody said when Kirill Kaprizov's being cross-checked into the boards and basically Doughty's trying to kick his ass, we need one of you guys to help him. Like I Ryan Hartman's not a weak player, okay? Like he's not a bruiser, but he's not a weak player, and he's certainly a scrappy player. He is out for an extended period of time because of a fluke that happened in a fight he picked. God forbid that's Kirill. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't want my star players ever, unless they just get jumped. I don't want them in that crap. And if they start it, you know what? I want someone to finish it. But this notion now of should the stars fight their own fights? I'm going to tell you right now. No,
right.
They never should. Going back to my day, they didn't. There's a reason why in the old days, a guy like Gretzky had Semenko or McSorley with him. Now, those guys basically don't exist. But, you know, if the choice is Boldy, who I love, he's great. But if the choice is Boldy jumps a guy or Kirill fights his own fight, I'm going to take Boldy to get in there every single time.
Absolutely, yeah. And he's a big boy, too. I think we kind of forget how big Matt Boldy is for how skillful he is. He's a power forward, man. I mean, he's young. You know, I think you're still seeing, as much as he is a grown man, if you will, you're still seeing those baby muscles still turning into bigger muscles, right? Like, you're still going to see that guy probably put on a few extra pounds of muscle between off seasons as he matures into an NHL player. So, yeah, I like that this team has usually always had a pretty good effort when it comes to sticking up for themselves, for the most part. I would say maybe even better in the post-Parise Suter era. That group,
yes.
Whether it's Foligno, Ryan Hartman, Brandon Duhaime, they've always been pretty well at sticking up for themselves. For a team, by the way, too, to our point about height, that's usually been relatively small. You know, like Matt Zuccarello is a smaller guy. I know Kirill's built like a house, but he's not a tall guy. Boldy's taller for sure, and Kulikov's a giant, but this is a relatively shorter team, yep. And they're still not afraid to stick up for themselves when the opponent does something that they probably shouldn't be doing.
Exactly. The third line, which had Marco Rossi back at center last night, I thought played an extremely good game. Rossi early in the game turned over the puck a couple times, and I don't like that. But for the most part, I thought that he played well. And again, I think he's starting to find a stride. It's taking time. I mean, that to me, it's not like he is a massive disappointment, but this is taking time. All of that being said, and again, it's the Ducks, so that probably helped a little bit, Dex, but I thought that Rossi's play and the play of that third line last night was extremely encouraging. And the more that Rossi can play games like that, and in my opinion, get his confidence up, the sooner that this is going to start to click. And perhaps your Write That Down will come true, and he will record his first National Hockey League goal before we do Write That Down on Mackey and Judd next Wednesday.
Yeah, I thought that line was phenomenal. And look, he's playing with Mason Shaw, who's a great success story after overcoming like five ACL tears, wherever the hell it is.
He's a little guy, dude. He's tough.
Yeah. But he's
a small guy. But whew.
And you certainly would like to see someone of Rossi's pedigree play with maybe better teammates than Mason Shaw and Connor Dewar. But just with the way this team's obviously formulated with their injuries, he's playing with them. But regardless, not to throw shade on the line, it was good. When you notice them in a positive way, and I think you're starting to string together a decent showing from Marco after I called him a passenger basically for the first 6-7 games, and now you're starting to see him make an impact. He's not just being a passenger. You're starting to see him drive a little bit more. You're seeing him be noticeable in front of the net more. You're starting to see him mature, and as he's gotten his feet wet in those first 6 games, you're now starting to see, oh, this is where maybe there is something to be unlocked here more. And he's not just being a passenger and just trying to coast by and not making mistakes. He's starting to make an impact and is starting to show up.
Yeah, and I think that the key thing there to go back is confidence. I think when he starts to get on a roll and get confident, his willingness to play a physical game grows.
Mm-hmm.
And in training camp, in the exhibition games, the one thing that I saw And he in those games, which obviously have a much different tone than these games, the one thing I saw was if he is willing to play tough, and he's, for his size, he's fairly strong, he is effective. If, to your point about the passenger thing, which I think you're exactly right about, if he lays off that and he like tries to get away with some skill, he tends to turn pucks over. It's frustrating. Doer earned praise up and down on the postgame show from Tockett. And I think, again, he picked a fight against a tough guy and actually, I think, not knocked him out of the game. I'm not sure exactly what the injury was. But guys like Doer and Shaw, I do like their approach a lot. Like, yeah. They are tough cookies, and they're the guys that, you know what, if they get in dust-ups, as long as they're not playing dumb, that's absolutely fine. But they also are guys that can occasionally score. So I thought that line, now I would like to see eventually, and I think he will, Rossi play with more skilled guys.
For sure.
But I did like the toughness and a small amount of skill that third line brought last night.
Yeah, I thought so too. And what's becoming so interesting here, and we can probably transition to this, is for a guy who I had very high expectations for going into the season, Tyson Jost might be playing himself outside of this roster at this point, man.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I think you're right.
You know, you made the case he came out of college a little too early, and that's probably true. He was log jammed in Colorado. I thought more from a defaulting standpoint because that team was just so deep, and he had a great training camp. Great preseason, noticeable in those situations, but it's been about 12 games, and he's also just played enough, I think, NHL games. I don't think there's some magical glass ceiling for him to break, and he's been given opportunities to play in significantly elevated roles, and he hasn't taken it, and it's not even patience from that point. It's just some guys just aren't cut out to be those players, and this is where, when we get into prospect hoarding, when we get in love to falling in love with prospects, and obviously it's different because Tyson Jost was acquired here and the Wild fans themselves never had an attachment necessarily to him up until 6-8 months ago. This is where just prospects sometimes, and Tyson Jost, who was the 10th overall pick in a draft just 5 years ago, a lot of times they just don't pan out. And we're kind of watching that, I think, with Tyson Jost of, yeah, was he a great college player? Were situations, you know, tough for him because he was playing on a deep team? Yes, but he's not the player that I think we all kind of thought he would be when he was giving elevated minutes and putting in a situation where he could be more. I think he's just a guy. Yeah, we talk about Jags all the time on Purple Daily on our Vikings podcast. He's a Jag at this point. I wouldn't be sure. I don't know if they'll outright waive him, but he's probably going to be destined to the penalty or to the press box, I should say, here soon enough when the Wild really start to get to full strength and become healthy.
So he got scratched a couple weeks ago, I think, and then he came back and played really hard and played well. He is the definition in baseball quad A player. I bet you if he went down to Iowa, he'd tear it up. The issue is, and this is where Doer and Shaw differ, the bottom six guys and guys like Jost have to play their asses off. Like, they're not going to get by on skill. They've got more skill than most, but in this league, they're just guys, unless they play their asses off. Jost doesn't do it. And the fact that he actually came back and played pretty well after being scratched, to me, is a massive indictment. Because, like, that means it's there. It just means that you're unlocking it. And now you're back to, well, my skill is going to get me by. And in no way, shape, or form is that true. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think he's a guy who was worth a look-see. Sturm was going to sign, you know, elsewhere. He got traded and won a cup with the Avalanche, and now he's with the Sharks. So he would have been gone regardless. So the trade is fine. But I think you fall in love with seeing the skill. Like, the difference is this. Rossi still has to work hard, but there is hopefully unlimited, untapped skill, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, he should just ascend. And that doesn't mean that he can cut corners, but it does mean that he has a lot more talent than Jost does. And Jost seems to think he's good.
Yeah.
Which is why I go back to, and this guy's not a problem, but, like, this goes to a conversation of a guy like Goudreau. And when Goudreau, who Dean loves and who does play his ass off, but when he's on that first line, and now he thinks, I can make some plays. It's like, no, dude, you can't. Like, you are Freddie Goudreau. Look in the mirror. You're a hard worker. And I don't care what line I put you on. That's not going to change. But it feels like, to your point with Jost, he's been moved through. He's played, what, some first line? I think he got a chance there, some second line. So he's gotten all types of chances. And now it just keeps regressing and regressing. And my guess is the next stop at some point in time might be Iowa, because they probably have some guys that are going to apply themselves more in their role here than Tyson Jost will. And I don't think Jost gets that.
I do think Jost requires waivers to get to Iowa.
He probably does.
That is an issue.
He gets claimed.
And he probably would get claimed. And I'm not suggesting that we're ripping the trade. Actually, I really like that trade. Nico Sturm for Tyson Jost straight up is you're taking a chance on a guy who was a top 10 pick, who was log jammed. You gave him an opportunity, gave him a shot. He played fine in the role last season, but you knew that, well, if I'm acquiring a 10th overall pick, that's only, you know, still just 24 years old, that there's something could be unlocked there. Go see it and try it out. And it's not working. That's fine. If you want to move on from him to another team and give him another opportunity to flourish elsewhere, go ahead and do so. But I think at this point, I've just seen enough that suggests that he's not going to be anything more than just a guy. He's a Jag, and you'd have to really, like you said, and this is what's so unique about hockey. It's not just a prospect that flames out but still turns into a serviceable Major League Baseball player. Tyson Jost has to physically work his butt off to be effective, and sometimes those guys just don't. It doesn't work the same way with baseball prospects and hockey prospects. And if I'm Billy Guerin, I probably am looking to just move off him sooner rather than later.
He could be a duck. He could be a duck. I'm trying to think of the teams that would claim a
Coyote.
Guy like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
well, and last year Montreal claimed
Pitlick,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, like that's the same exact thing. Like, he can play for you. He doesn't do a lot. You're like, okay, if we keep him and can send him to the minors, that's fine. If we can't, that's fine too. But I think the key thing here is the Wild's probably going to have guys who are in Iowa who will come up and serve a role more. And yeah, the Sturm trade was fine because he was going to bolt here for nothing.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to stay here. I think he's convinced that he should play a lot more, and Sturm wasn't going to. So yeah, that's absolutely fine. Getting his first win last night in goal. 32 saves, if I'm not mistaken. Gustafson, I don't know. I've heard it pronounced each way, but I thought he played well. And the reality is this: with the way that Fleury is playing right now, that's what you need.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Flower will come back and play tomorrow, which is fine. The Flower is going to play for the time being the majority of games. So when you put Gustafson in, if he can just basically hold serve and give you a solid performance, he's a two. As we've talked about, he is not a 1B. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, it was just his fourth game of the year and just his second in basically almost 3 weeks. And his last two performances at Detroit, 2 goals. The Wild should have won that game. I believe they lost that one in the shootout or overtime, if that memory serves right. And he allowed 1 goal against a bad Ducks team. Like, you know, if he's only going to play every fifth game, and also you can be strategic about it, right? There's still some bottom feeders in this league. Put him against those teams. And you can't ask more from your backup goalie who, by the way, is a true backup. It's not like, oh, we got 1A and we got 1B. No,
right.
No, this is a 2. This is a hard 2. This is the backup to Marc-Andre Fleury. This is not a guy who's threatening for his job. These guys exist all over the league. And the last two games now, and I know it was basically 2 weeks between performances, between the Detroit game and the Anaheim game, that's exactly what you want from a backup goalie. Can he not shipwreck things? Can he give you a chance to win? He's done that in both starts. This is going to be Marc-Andre Fleury's net, man. Even though he's going to be turning 38 here in a couple weeks, he's probably going to start 60 games. And it's clear that he likes to be in a rhythm for that. And it's not a Dubnyk situation where I have to be in a rhythm because that's the only way I can play effective. Well, when you're Marc-Andre Fleury and you know what to do and you know what it takes to win Stanley Cups and you know what it takes to condition, you need to be in that rhythm, and you also need to honor that for him. So yeah, if Gustafson wants to come in every fifth start and he plays like the way he does the last two starts, you'll take it every time.
And in fact, for the next week or so, it works out perfect because the Wild is in Seattle on Friday, which I'm sure will be Fleury's net. And then they play host to the Sharks here at 5 o'clock on Sunday, which Gustafson can play.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing for you. your thoughts on what Paul Bissonnette talked about last night. He wants to do away with the offside reviews. I heard, so here's another thing I read that I like this one.
Okay.
I don't want to do away with them because it can save the bacon of a linesman in a really big game. The other one I heard more palatable to me is this one. If a team brings the puck into the zone and the defensive team has a chance to clear it and can't, so like it's held in, as soon as it's held in, the offside review goes away. So the fact that the puck was brought in offside now no longer becomes reviewable because there was a chance to clear and it was missed.
Mm-hmm.
I could live with that. And Biz's point was that Zegras goal was so cool that he didn't want it wiped away. I am not for undoing, although they do drive you crazy at times, I'm not for undoing the offside review. I would be willing to talk about how it's done a little bit. Because, I mean, that was a cool goal, but you can't base it on one cool goal.
Yeah, I think I kind of like your method there.
I forget who. I think it was Jeff Merrick, possibly.
I think if the defensive team had an opportunity where they regain possession of the puck or they won a battle and they weren't able to clear. But the problem with that is that's even more of a gray area.
It's
right?
A gray area, yeah. But possession, yes. Yes. But I mean, I'd be more willing to explore that. I don't want to do away with it because the second that you do, it's going to be a playoff game and some bozo is going to be offside and it's going to be crystal clear and it's going to be a goal and you can't review it.
It should 100% offsides be reviewed. Yes. Like just yes. That's a hard black and white yes for me. But I know what Biz is saying. I know what other people are saying that, well, if it's taking forever and it's only going so far, you know, and it takes away a great goal like that, is there a point of time where they've entered the zone and they've been in there for 30 seconds? Well, now like, all right, the defense had time and you couldn't clear the puck. You couldn't get it out. It's no longer. Is there something like that? You know, even too, is there a time thing? I don't know. Good thing I'm not an NHL ref though. Thank God. The only one I would get rid of, as I've told you numerous times before, it's on my list of things I would love to change for all four sports. If you have an empty net, I don't think that the defensive team should be charged with icing. I don't think if they want to clear the puck when the net is pulled with an extra attacker, I don't think they should be penalized for icing. I think if they want to just dump the damn thing down, I don't think they should be penalized. I think it should be waved off in that situation.
But the league wants goals.
Yes, they do.
So, like, they want that excitement to bring it back.
Yeah.
Like, I get your point, but the league wants the face-offs then to generate the goals, to get more goals. And teams, you know, the intriguing thing about that is I think the argument against that by the league would now be the fact that in this day and age, the accepted philosophy is to take your shot at the net. Because that used to be the no-no, right?
Right.
Like, how could you ice it? How could and now it's like, hell yeah, ice, you know, take a shot at the net. And if you miss it, it's icing. Who cares? But yeah, I don't think you can do away with the replay on offsides. But it does drive me crazy when it's been like an extended period of time, 45 seconds. And now it's like, let's take a look at that again. So, all right, we're done. Take us home, man.
All right, hit the subscribe button, Daily Minnesota Wild Entertainment, basically. Well, close enough to it on this YouTube channel on Score North. This is Judd's Hockey Show. That's Judd Zolgad. I'm Declan Goff. Hit the subscribe button for Daily Minnesota Sports Entertainment. That's the tagline I was looking for. And also head on over to Purple Daily for Daily Minnesota Vikings Entertainment and Pass Shoot Score.
Listen, you guys know what this is all about, right? What's it all about? Spurgy?
Hard work and having fun.
That. This is about winning.
Splash Weather Repel Premium Windshield Wash features a 3-in-1 formula that repels rain, sleet, snow, and bugs while leaving a streak-free shine. It keeps you seeing safely all year long. Pick up some at Walmart today.
See safely on the road when you apply a little splash.